Well, hello, everyone. Happy Columbus Day to you. Or if you're easily offended and you consider yourself extremely woke, happy Indigenous Peoples Day. I'm Alan Sanders, filling in for Eric. He's enjoying time with family. A lot of schools will have the day off. A lot of government services off today. Non-essential services may be off today. And then some schools could be on today. So you might want to just call ahead, check ahead before you go anywhere on what is not technically a full-blown holiday anymore, but it is certainly a banking holiday, so you might find a lot of your financial institutions not open and running today. I'm going to be with you here all the way till the noon hour. Privileged to be able to fill in for the conservative Viking himself, and looking forward to having some fun today with you guys. And of course, we'll take your calls. I'll tell you how to get in touch with me via social media if you prefer that. I wanted to start off with just, since it is Columbus Day, and we are going to kind of back into some of the other topics I've got, but today is technically the day that we all learned when I was growing up is the day that Columbus discovered America. Now, we know he didn't actually land on the continental United States of America, but we have to start using our brains for a place other than just to hang a hat. We have to be able to put things in historical context. It is so funny to me when you've got people out there trying to use today's current hypersensitive, overly politically correct, extremely woke methodology for trying to then assess how life was in Europe in 1492. It's an exercise in stupidity, and yet it happens over and over and over again. Hence the renaming in over 100 cities and a handful of states calling it, no, we're not going to call it Columbus Day. That's offensive because Columbus did things that we find offensive by today's standards. He should have known better. We're going to call it Indigenous Peoples Day because that makes us feel good about ourselves, because we can say, look how much more accepting we are. Look how much more appreciative we are of culture and the fact that Columbus came in here to just appropriate the cultures that he wanted to just make a quick buck. Look, back in the time of 1492, do you realize that the vast majority of Europe was under the belief, because the scientific consensus out there was the world was flat? Hey, how about that scientific consensus label? That's always great to use until somebody comes along and finds out that, hey, all of our preconceived notions were absolutely wrong. Let's go back to the drawing board. Yeah, he thought to himself, no. If things disappear over the horizon, maybe the Earth is curved. Of course, that is taking into account, I don't know, physics and geometry and understanding that, hey, if maybe there's a faster way for us to get to the Indies, to get over to the other side of the Orient, by instead of going all the way across country, we can actually sail west. And if we sail west, we'll eventually come back around and we'll get there faster. Now, he didn't get to the Indies. He found out the Earth is a lot bigger than he initially thought. But you know what? Had that not happened, the exploration from Europe to the United States and all of the areas in this side of the world would not have happened. Columbus Day is a celebration of that sense of the explorer, that sense of why can't we do this? Why can't we find out what lies over the horizon, over the hill, under the water? Why can't we do that? That sense of curiosity, that sense of exploration. And Columbus had that. And had he not done that, it would have never led to Amerigo Vespucci actually landing on America, hence the name America from Amerigo Vespucci. Of course, you can go all the way back to the Vikings. They were technically here hundreds of years beforehand. There was always that sense of exploration. The idea that you're going to then take Columbus Day and rename it because you just want to talk about how sensitive you are because of cultural appropriation, because of being woke and politically correct. Come on, can we stop that? Can we just recognize that in 1492, the idea of sailing the opposite direction to get to where you wanted to go was an unheard of thing, and that those three ships full of brave individuals trying to figure out where the new world was? That's amazing to me. And I think that should be something we keep in mind, the context of what that was, the context of the explorer. I want to give you the phone number, 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. Anything we're talking about today, you feel free to chime in and add to the conversation. We appreciate all of the stations across the network here carrying the Eric Erickson Show. I'm going to take this concept that we have of the explorer, and I want to dovetail that into something that's going to be coming up here shortly. And I know it feels weird to talk about Thanksgiving now. I mean, we still haven't had, you know, Halloween. And I know a lot of people get all bent out of shape if you mention holidays in a different order. But, you know, you had a merchant, Christopher Columbus, who did have as a goal a money-making opportunity. That sense of the curiosity of exploring, trying to find a different path, certainly is what drove him to figure out, is there a faster way for me to go to market, get a product or sell a product faster and maybe at a better price, bring it back and make money? Hence the initial strands of capitalism, right? Now, I want to fast forward to the very first, you know, use of communism versus capitalism here in our own country. Whether you know it or not, we actually had a couple of our initial settlements believed in the commune or the communist style of living. You had a setup in Plymouth where the colonists initially came in and they believed that the best way to live and to survive as a religious, pious group was to create a central repository for anything that was farmed or made or sown and then equally divided among the people. Governor Bradshaw, but that's not the right name. I'll get this here in just a second. But the governor of that settlement in Plymouth, he said, "We are going to do it this way because we are escaping religious persecution. We want to be able to live the way we want to live in our new world. And we're escaping that sense of oppression, that sense of..." William Bradford is the name I was thinking of, not Bradshaw. So William Bradford, with all of these pious religious individuals, came over and for the first 2 years lost nearly 70% of the people. They died from starvation. They died from malnutrition because as pious and as religious as they were, there is something within each of us, that sense of innate fairness. And when we start feeling like someone is infringing on that fairness, we start to become resentful. And no matter how religious and how pious and how much of, you know, we want to be godlike, and especially the early pilgrims wanted to be, there was this sense of resentment building. Because if you're the strapping young man and you're out there and you're harvesting 3 and 4 times the amount of crops as your neighbor, you start to resent your neighbor. And oh, guess what William Bradford wrote and found out about during that first couple of years of trying communism? He discovered that the people that couldn't do as much, they were still getting their equal fair share. Right? They all were getting their fair share. So why work harder? Why push yourself to do more? Why go out on the limb? Right? So they stopped working as hard, letting the other people shoulder the load. And guess what? 70% of the population died from lack of food, lack of necessities. So in the third year, William Bradford said, "We're not doing this anymore. We're not going to do this anymore. We are not going to embrace this idea that it's all one big shared pot equally divided. What we're going to do is we're going to divvy up the land. And based on the size of your family, will be the deciding factor on how much property you'll have. And it is up to you and you alone with your family to farm that land and do what you have to do to survive. We are no longer going to put it all in one pot. It's up to you." And everybody said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait, you want me to actually be self-reliant? You want me to actually have to take care of myself? You want me to think for myself, do for myself, pick myself up? Wait, what happened to you taking care of me? And so I could kick back, relax, put my feet up, and let you do all the work. Oh, dang it. Well, now I'm going to actually have to step it up." And guess what? What William Bradford wrote was that more work was done in that year more crops were harvested, more focused effort on harvesting the necessary food and resources to survive that winter, and that is where we had our first Thanksgiving. Yes, we learned from indigenous peoples here. Yes, there were other things that were happening. But if you read the writings of Governor William Bradford, did I say William Wallace? William Bradford, he really understood that there is an innate sense within each of us that if you give me the freedom and you give me the expectation that I'm on my own, that I will excel. I will meet the bar you set for me. If you set a bar super low, that's where I'm going. But if you put that bar high and you challenge me, there is an innate sense within all of us to rise to that challenge. And there was a greater sense of community, of harmony. They raised more crops. William Bradford wrote about how the women would go along with their husbands to plant in the field. They would actually sow more than they ever had before because they suddenly realized we have to do this, right? It was the sense and the birth of capitalism, that sense of, hey, give me the opportunity to do something. Give me the opportunity to make as much as I can. And guess what? When someone had enough that they said, look, I've got enough crop to last through the winter, and I've got excess. My neighbor now doesn't have as much food, but my neighbor is much better at mending clothing. I have another neighbor that's much better at hewing lumber. Guess what? Now I can trade my excess for those goods and services. Now I have created commerce. And now, based on everybody's individual skills and talents, you started to see the very first inklings of what we have here in our country as capitalism, what Adam Smith wrote about here in our country, that sense of American exceptionalism. That doesn't mean that we are saying we're better than every other country in the world. What we're saying is our underpinnings, our foundation was based on freedom, the freedom to explore, to try, to be curious, and not have an overarching, overreaching government that was going to tell us what we can and can't do, what job we are allowed to have or not allowed to have. The sense of freedom, the sense of you're not born into a caste. You're not born into one particular funnel or another. You can move. You can move up the scale or, hey, you risk everything and lose and you go down the scale. And that's life. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But it's up to you to make those choices for yourself. And the reason I'm using this story and Columbus Day to start this first segment off is I want to get into what Bernie Sanders just recently did, calling out Elizabeth Warren, and what Elizabeth Warren is doing for herself, calling herself a capitalist to her bones. And I want to chat about that because we don't survive in a communistic society. You cannot survive. And you never get to what they always write on paper. You never get to the point that the Bernie Sanders and the Elizabeth Warrens think you'll get to. And we're going to talk about that when we come back because I want to really draw another allusion for you because Halloween is around the corner. I have a Halloween story that I can tell you that helps to illustrate why socialism and communism will, in fact, never work. Welcome back, everyone, to the Eric Erickson Show. I am not Eric Erickson. I'm filling in. Alan Sanders with you here until the noontime hour. Appreciate you guys being out there. And I am thankful to Eric for being in here in his stead. 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. If you want to weigh in on anything that I'm chatting about today, you can find me on social media as well. I've got a public Facebook page, easy enough to find. It's called The Alan Sanders Show. You spell Alan, A-L-A-N, four-letter word. Use it as my other four-letter words are often used. The Alan Sanders Show. You can also find me on Twitter, Alan J. Sanders. And there we go. Talked about the sort of early formations of capitalism. You had Columbus today, the day we are celebrating, for that spirit of exploration. But underneath that spirit was a sense, hey, if I can find a quicker, faster way to market, then I can become a more successful business person. Yes, there was the sense of the explorer, and yes, of trying something that no one else has tried before. The risk that went with that produced a large reward. That's the way our system works, right? That's what capitalism is. It's not just demand and the availability and demand are that we've got risk and reward as well. And when we look at the early formations of our colonists and our colonies here in our country, They tried the idea of we will share and share alike. We'll give everybody their fair portion. And it bred among the most religious, pious people in the world. It bred resentment and negativity and a sense of slothfulness and then anger and aggression because it's a human trait. You keep talking about fairness, but if you get handed everything on a plate, we all systems, what is it we learn in physics about enthalpy and all things go to the least amount of energy and the least amount of order. The highest chaos and the least amount of energy, that's where most stable systems, you know, kind of equilibrium, they hit that sense of equilibrium. Enthalpy and entropy, right? You remember that from physics? And they had a physics teacher who actually said, look at your average teenage bedroom. They could make that room look absolutely perfect. Bed made, clothes put up, everything away, no food. But that takes effort and energy to actually keep it that way. And the system wants to get to the least amount of organization and the least amount of energy necessary to sustain itself. Watch that room a couple of days later. Bed's not made, clothes everywhere, bag of chips opened, because everything wants to move in that direction unless you take an enormous amount of effort and exert that effort and say, no, I'm not going to succumb to the laws of enthalpy and entropy. I am going to force myself. And William Bradford realized if I don't push the colonists to take care of themselves, they won't. It's obvious. For 2 years, we've watched our colony self-destruct. And that is what happens whenever you think socialism and communism is your answer. So let me give you this little analogy. For you folks who are big fans of Elizabeth Warren, and you're going to tell me why she's still right and I'm wrong. Or you're huge fans of Feeling the Burn, Bernie Sanders, who has no problem, and I got to applaud him. He's been consistent. He's out there saying, look, I'm a socialist. That's what I do. I take everything from everyone, and I divide it up equally because we don't like greed. Although, I'm not giving up my 3 or 4 mansions and my $1 million book deal. Anyway, I want you to imagine this. Imagine you stepping back to when you were first trick-or-treating, when you were like 5, 6, 7 years old. Remember, you would go with mom and dad up and down the street. We've got Halloween just a few weeks away. You went up and down the street, and you went at mom and dad's pace. And you had your little small pumpkin jack-o'-lantern, and you went and collected whatever candy you could get that mom and dad would take you from house to house. But do you remember when you got a little bit older, and your mom and dad said, you know what, I think we can trust you, you and your friends, or you and your siblings. We're going to let you go. We're going to let you go by yourself. What did you do? Do you remember? I know what I did. That first time I knew I could go trick-or-treating all by myself, I didn't bring that little small jack-o'-lantern. I knew I was going to hit 10 times more houses than I had ever hit when I was with mom and dad. I got the pillowcase out of the linen closet, and I ran through yards. That whole idea of go down the driveway, then come up the next. No, I was hopping through bushes, hopping fences. My goal was to hit as many houses as I could. Do you guys remember that? Remember doing that for Halloween? And you thought to yourself, look how much more candy I got because I went faster. I worked harder. I collected more. Now, take that impression because we all have that story. We all remember what it was like to go do that. Now, imagine coming back home and you've got your 5-year-old nephew. You've got a 7-year-old niece. You've got your 8-year-old brother. You've got your 9-year-old sister. And then you're sitting there as the 12 and 13-year-old. And your mom says, okay, everybody, here's what we're going to do now. Now that we're all back from trick-or-treating, we're going to put all of our candy in the middle, and we're going to divide it up equally. And everyone gets the exact same amount of candy. Tell me, how angry would you be? How resentful would you be at your younger siblings who didn't work as hard, who didn't run from house to house, who didn't put the effort into getting more candy? You did all the work, and now you're having to give the vast majority of your profits away because somebody else says, I know what's fair. Greed is not good. Greed is bad. I can tell you what to do with your money more than you can. See, you have to look at it in context. I started off at the very beginning about the context of history, the context of what it was like to have that exploration. Now, let's take a look at the context of what Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and most of the Democrats are selling, because we have a huge debate tomorrow night, and they're going to be trying to profligate this idea that communism and socialism is the preferred and better way to go, and that absolutely is not true. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eric Erickson Show. Alan Sanders here filling in for him. Big shout out to the cities right now tuned in. We've got Clarksville, we've got Rome, Dalton, Jasper, Adel. We've got Valdosta, Vidalia coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to add Athens. We appreciate you guys being out there and listening. If you want to call in, it's simple, 877-97-ERIC. That's spelled E-R-I-C-K. Let me get it. This is easier, 877-973-7425. You can also find me on social media if you want to send me a message that way. It's either the Alan Sanders Show on Facebook or Alan J. Sanders on Twitter. Talking about socialism, communism, why it doesn't work, just gave you the Halloween candy analogy. If you missed out on that, I'll recap it in a little bit. But for the most part, just imagine that if you go out and about and you got more candy than your neighbors or your friends, but you were forced to all put it in one big pile and then divvy it up. What's your incentive? What's your incentive to keep you know, pushing harder, to work harder, to be first to market, to be the first to try to achieve something no one else has, to be the first to put that sense of risk versus reward on the table? You know, I had a chance recently to talk to the future business leaders of America at Cartersville High School in Northwest Georgia. And that it was one of the biggest on-campus groups, the FBLA. And a lot of you folks may remember, if you went back in high school, if you had a chapter of the FBLA, the goal of FBLA was to teach high school students some of the basics and principles of business and business leadership so you wouldn't be taken off guard moving into the business sector. Whether you went straight to college, but you know, maybe had a side job, but you were thinking always about, what is my career going to be? What is my job going to be? What am I going to do to earn a living? And I had a chance to talk to them recently, and I said, let's make this very, very clear about this idea of American exceptionalism, about capitalism, about our form of economic might and growth in our country, and the freedom and how important those freedoms are that our founding fathers carved out for us. Because when it comes down to it, nobody, not one person that I can think of, has ever sat down at the kitchen table with that next brilliant idea, that next service or good or redesign that they're going to be able to bring to market. Not a single one of them has ever sat down and said, I want to make sure that whatever we do, we don't make any money. That is just ridiculous and fatuous. And the idea that we have senators, elected representatives from states in our union, who are self-avowed socialists, who don't believe in the idea of making money, the idea of winning in the marketplace, the idea of being successful. Because think about this. If you are against wealth and wealth creation and wealth growth, aren't you also then against success? Aren't you an enemy of progress? Aren't you saying status quo, or at the very least, set a minimum bar and all of us will just settle for the minimum as long as it's all the same? Do you really believe that that is inherent in you? Sameness? Oh, it sounds good when you're told college is free, healthcare free. You won't have to pay rent anymore. We're going to give you a car. We're going to give you a home. We're going to give you food. It sounds good. But don't you, deep down, don't you know that's wrong? And it fails everywhere it's been tried. There is not one instance across the vast history of human civilization that communism or socialism can sustain itself. What the only way communism and socialism lasts is we never get to that nirvana that they're always talking about. You know, everything will be great. We'll all have free education. We'll all have free food. We'll all have free housing. It's all wonderful. We'll be able to sit back and pop bonbons and watch TV all day long. The problem is, just as you start to move toward that, because you always start off the same way, you promise and promise and promise, you don the Santa Claus outfit, you put the big sack on your back and go, ho, 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 look what I've got for my little girls and boys. Well, here's the problem. When you act like a child, it leaves only the parents to take charge. And if you want to be a child and you want to be childish and get everything for free and not actually have to do anything for yourself, not have to work, not have to try, not have to put forth the effort, well, guess what? There's going to be a handful of people in positions of power who are more than happy to take on that role. And every single time, it always leads to the same thing. The people in charge, the 5 or 10%, either in government or military, will then oppress the other 90% of the population. You won't be allowed to have a gun. You won't be allowed the freedom to choose a different job. You won't be allowed the freedom to go to a doctor that you want to go to. You won't be allowed to buy the car you want to buy, the light bulb you want to buy. You won't be allowed to go to the school you want to go to. You won't be allowed to have the career path you want. Because at some point, when you abdicate your freedom to an overriding government that wants to do it all for you, guess what? You're also giving them the power to make decisions for you. Are you good with that? Are you a Bernie Sanders follower? Are you an Elizabeth Warren follower? Do you feel like those two represent a better way for our country? Do you feel that you could give everybody whatever they want, their heart's desires, and that's going to actually work? I mean, you've read plenty of like fairy tales growing up, right? Even fairy tales have a moral to the story. What do you think the moral to this story is if you just think you can get whatever you want, that cotton candy is going to just start popping up on trees? What do you think that you're going to have if you just promise the world to everyone? Do you think everyone's just going to stop making money? All these providers of goods and services are just going to suddenly, out of the goodness of their heart, say, we are wrong. Oh my gosh, we went into business to make money and we are now shown the error of our ways. We should now give everything away and lose money. And then we won't have anything to pay our employees, but it won't matter because we're all going to be equally miserable. Yay. Tomorrow night, you're going to get a chance to see the Democrats debate over what works and what doesn't work, what they represent. Bernie Sanders trying to draw a comparison with Elizabeth Warren, saying she is a capitalist through her bones, but I'm not. Well, no, we know Bernie Sanders is not a capitalist, certainly. He has said it over and over and over again. He's a proud socialist. Now, he's running as a Democrat, but he says he's a socialist. He's a member of the Democrat Socialist Party. We're going to see them on the stage tomorrow night, and I'm curious, what are you hoping to see them say? What are you hoping to hear? Who do you think is going to end up being on top of that debate? Because there are several people. This is going to be the biggest stage so far. You know, we've had to double up debates before. The first two, you had back-to-back nights because you had 10 on each stage. There's going to be 12 individuals on the stage tomorrow evening in Ohio. You've got former Vice President Joe Biden, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. You've got former HUD Secretary Julian Castro. You've got Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard, California Senator Kamala Harris, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, billionaire executive Tom Steyer, and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. One more. Entrepreneur Andrew Yang. All on stage tomorrow evening, all hoping to get your vote, all hoping to win the primary so they could be the representative from the Democrat Party that is going to challenge Donald Trump. Of course, that's assuming that the DNC believes that Donald Trump is going to be there in office, right? Because you know what they're doing with that whole investigation. That's something we'll talk about maybe in a little bit. They know. They look at the field and they're going, oh my gosh, that's great. You can pander to a base. You can pander to the 40%. They're going to pull the lever for a D no matter what. You could put, you know, an animal in a sheep's clothing and they'll vote for the D because that's just how they were raised. You could put a criminal, a murderer. It doesn't matter. You could put anybody in there. If they're running and there's people out there that 40%, they're going to pull the lever for the D. Now, don't get me wrong. You've got the same 40% that are going to pull the lever for the R no matter what. It's the 20% in the middle that you have to fight for. So how do you win your base but also be kind of in the middle enough to pull from that 20%? And that's where the problem is. You've got these candidates going so far left. How do you swing back enough to pick up those middle votes? How do you get the centrist? You've already had centrist candidates in the Democrat Party have to drop out because they couldn't get enough support for common sense governance, even as Democrats, but they weren't radical. They weren't socialist leaning. They weren't leftists. They were just a little bit more to the left of center. You had individuals that understood what it was like to run hospitals, run businesses. They understood the market. They understood market forces and market tension. They understood how things will work and how things have worked. And you can't just radically change the entire system of our government just because you want to give things away. It's not going to work. It's going to implode. And guess what? The messages of reason, the messages of, hey, we've got to pick our fights, pick our battles. We can't do everything. We can't give away everything. Those candidates are already being weeded out. Why? Because right now in the primaries, it's your base, and the base is rabid. And they have been told now for years that you don't have to work. We'll take care of you. You don't have to provide for yourself. We'll take care of you. You don't have to think for yourself. We'll do that for you. And it's amazing that we actually have a percentage of Americans starting to get closer and closer to that halfway point, which would mean the majority. We're growing closer and closer to a group of Americans who actually think that's what it is to be American. You know, I started off at the very beginning talking about the exploration being Columbus Day. Once the New World was discovered, you know what that did? That opened the door to people moving from countries in Europe to the New World. And go back to your basic civics classes, if you had those when you were in school. Go back to your basic, you know, government American history classes. What was one of the biggest overriding reasons why people wanted to come to the New World? Was it because it was easier here? Was it because they had more luxury and more comfort? Absolutely not. It was a much harder existence to come here. To sail in a ship for 2 and 3 months across the ocean, not knowing, no radar, no sonar, no idea where those typhoons and hurricanes, they didn't know what hurricane season was. They didn't know when the best time to sail. People were lost at sea. But they came here, why? To escape persecution. To escape specifically religious persecution. And as colonists finally figured out how to flourish over here and started to build a civilization here, trade and commerce opened up. And then suddenly people in Europe started to say, guess what? There's an opportunity over here to do something I can't do where I currently live. I'm going to have the ability to do things over in the New World that I can't do here. It's a risk, but I'm willing to take that risk. I'm willing to go over there. I'm willing to travel. I'm willing to put myself and my family in harm's way for the opportunity of a better world. Why do you think so many people are coming across our border illegally to come to the United States? If everything we're doing is so bad and so wrong, and the Elizabeth Warrens and the Bernie Sanders and the Cory Bookers are going to tell us how everything we're doing is wrong or bad or should be done better because greed is bad and wealth is bad. Why are so many people willing to come here? Why are so many people willing to break the law, to sneak across the border, to come to the United States? If it's so bad the way we're currently doing things, why? It's the same answer as to when we started forming colonies here. It's the exact same thing. If you have freedom, if you're not being oppressed by a dictatorship that is there to tell you what you can and can't do, you just inherently know I've got more opportunity to succeed. Because where I was, I'm only given a certain number of options. But if I go over to this new world, my options are infinite. And part of being infinite means maybe I fail. But also part of being infinite is maybe I succeed beyond my wildest imaginations. The more we are willing to abdicate our freedoms to people willing to buy your vote with promises of don't worry about college, don't worry about those expenses, don't worry about your debt, don't worry about your home, your car, don't worry about your food. We're going to do it all for you, cradle to grave. We're going to wipe your butt from the time you pop out to the time you have to wear adult diapers, but we'll take care of it for you. Don't, in your wildest imaginations, fool yourself into thinking that you are not moving us closer and closer to that exact same dictatorship slash monarchy that we tried to escape from so long ago. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show. I'm Alan Sanders filling in. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to the Eric Erickson Show. Alan Sanders filling in for the conservative Viking. He's out enjoying the time with family, and that is an awesome thing, and I'm just privileged to be here and appreciate the opportunity to step into such amazing shoes all throughout the state of Georgia on the Eric Erickson Show. You can find me on social media, by the way. It's The Alan Sanders Show on Facebook. That is an open public page. If you do a search for my name and it brings you my private one, it's going to say, he's got to approve you. Well, my public one, you don't have to worry about it. You just go to the public page and like it, and boom, you'll know where I am at any point in time. I put my schedule out there so folks can tune in and listen if they want. You can also find out what I'm thinking about on social media by finding me on Twitter with Alan J. Sanders. We're talking about really the underpinnings of our country, and we are at a seminal part in our history about where are we going to go. Do we need to take a moment and look at who we are as Americans? There used to be a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats in the sense of, well, what kind of, you know, the Democrats would traditionally be that party to look out for the little guy, you know? They kind of built themselves around the working class. And the Republicans, technically, although they still took care of the working class, kind of got the reputation of being more business friendly. So they tended to maybe gravitate toward laws and policies that benefited business. And if you were successful, of course, you were more wealthy. So it became that sort of, oh, look, Republicans only care about wealthy people. Do you know how many billionaires support the Democrat Party right now? And do you know how many billionaires the Democrats are trying to woo? You've got a guy who's finally made it to the debate stage because he could self-fund enough Facebook campaigns. Tom Steyer, a sugar daddy to Democrats, loves giving money. He bought his way onto that stage tomorrow night. Yep, Tom Steyer, he's going to get it. He's going to be there tomorrow night as we make our way through the debate. Now, this debate is going to be tomorrow evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, from the Liberal Arts College of Otterbein University in Westerville, Ohio. That's a suburb of Columbus. And to qualify for that debate, they had to, as of October 1, which obviously we've passed, they needed to amass at least 130,000 unique donors. They had to prove that they had at least 130,000 donations from individual people, not one person donating 10 times, but individual unique donors, with 400 unique donors per state in at least 20 states. And then you had to find out if they could get at least 2% support in four different DNC-approved polls between June 28 and October 1. So the 12 candidates you're going to see on stage tomorrow evening met that minimum criteria. There are folks who did not meet that criteria, by the way. There are some individuals that are still wanting to be in the race that did not make that criteria. Who didn't make it? Self-help author Marianne Williamson. She met the donor requirements, but not the polling. Six others met none of the requirements, which includes Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, Montana Governor Steve Bullock, former Maryland Representative John Delaney, Miramar, Florida Mayor Wayne Messam, Ohio Representative Tim Ryan, and former Pennsylvania Representative Joe Stesic. Joe Sestak. You have the six candidates, technically seven when you count Marianne Williamson, that are still in the race. They still think they've got a shot. What is it Cory Booker said the other day? Cory Booker barely pulling it in by the skin of his teeth, saying, oh, there is a path. I jokingly said, sure, if you hire somebody from the Clinton Foundation to go out and take care of your opponents, I'm sure there's a path to victory. I don't think it's going to be through polling, and it certainly isn't through your stances. Your leading pollers, by the way, Joe Biden, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders has dropped in the last couple of weeks. Part of that is because of his heart attack. Now, a lot of people are going, ooh, liked his ideas. Is he going to be healthy enough to not only live through the primaries, but make it through the battle against Donald Trump for election in 2020. Maybe he's, maybe we like his ideas, but maybe he's the wrong person. So watch for him to really try to chip away at Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren. Watch for Warren to try to figure out how to use the word capitalist as much as she can, but then I want you to really pay attention. How many of her policies really belong in the camp of capitalism? Because when you're giving everything away, that's not capitalism. I want you to think about this. When you listen to everybody make promises on the stage tomorrow evening, I want you to think about this particular little story. You and I can go walk down the street together. We're having a good conversation, and we come to a little alleyway, and we see somebody lying there, obviously having slept in the alley, got a cardboard sign that says, homeless, need help. And we both look down at this person, and we decide out of the compassion of our own hearts to take money out of our pocket and give it to that person. Now, growing up, we were encouraged that if you had excess, you had leftover, that you should do something for your fellow man. And so I can reach into my pocket and give a $20 bill to that individual. And we would call that charity. And charity is a good thing. Now, let's go and do the exact same scenario. We're walking down the street, see the same person. You put your hand in my pocket, take out a $20 bill, and hand it to him. Well, we call that theft. And even though you might think that the ends justify the means, you didn't give me the opportunity to make the decision. You did it for me. And that's theft. Think about what they're promising on that stage tomorrow evening.